Just a heads up before we get into today's episode, it is discussing mental health.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
We are determined to ensure a considered process, not just an understanding of what happened, but to ensure the key learnings come from this, not just for us, but the broader football community and industry.
That's Carlton CEO Graham Wright speaking about the ongoing investigation into Elijah Holland's mental health episode on field against Collingwood last Thursday night. Vision of Holland's in-game has spread like wildfire, and the questions of Carlton and their handling of this have come thick and fast. How could this have happened? Why was he allowed to play? And how can we stop this from happening again? I'm Poppy Penny, and this is ABC Sport Daily. Tom Boyd is a premiership player for the Western Bulldogs and since retiring in 2019 has been an advocate for mental health and well-being. Tom, I know your experience and what Elijah Hollands has experienced are different things, but I'm hoping to talk about how this has and might continue to play out through your eyes. How did you feel about what you were seeing on Thursday night in the match between Carlton and Collingwood?
Yeah, thanks for having me for starters. I think one of the things that's critically important to understand is that regardless of what's actually happened, during these moments when really significant attention-grabbing issues pop up within the footy world in particular, these things tend to be extremely polarizing and it obviously creates an enormous amount of speculation. And I'm probably one of the few people, I suppose, who's experienced a combination of things, a huge amount of attention and mental health being at the core component of that. And so for me, I think really around the responsibility that we all have and the lifelong impacts that these types of moments can have. And I think there's this naivety in many ways that people have to say, hey, it's just a 48-hour news cycle. It'll go away in 2 days or a week. That's not really how it works. What happens, and I've experienced this firsthand for the better and the worse, is that your entire life can be shaped by these moments. And it infects every part of your life into the future. And so for me, you know, as a father of two young kids, I put myself in the position of really just looking at it to say, you know, if this was my kid, how would I want them to be treated? And what would I want them to feel from the support of the football public and his friends, family members, and of course the footy club as well.
Carlton have since come out and said that this was a mental health episode for him on the field and that they were aware he was struggling during the game.
We were aware that he was struggling in the game and he's had potentially had anxiety previously and panic attacks, and our guys were dealing with him in the game that obviously he was having having some problems.
You've been inside the four walls of a footy club and, as you say, are really uniquely placed to speak about this. How is it possible that he played three and a bit quarters of footy?
Yeah, I've thought about this from both angles, frankly. To look at it through the lens of the actual pragmatic preparation for a game of footy, I can see both arguments, right? I can see the fact that really building momentum for a game of footy is like a wave. You start, you enter the ground, you build up. And everyone's job is one, as a player, to get themselves to the position where they can play their best footy. But for the support staff, the coaching staff, the medical staff, their job is to get their players to the point where they can play the best game. And that really is the number one, two, three, four, and five priority. And whilst I can see the concept that people would say, with all of those touch points, did they not notice something throughout the warm-up and the lead-up? And I don't know the answer to that. And again, to your point off the top, I don't really feel the need to speculate. But what I can say is that that heightened pressure as you lead into not just any game of footy, but the game of footy of Collingwood and Carlton at the MCG with 80,000 people is incredibly difficult to pick out moments in time and then go, yeah, there's a trend of an issue here rather than people seeing erratic moments over any course of time. And that's regardless of the issue. And the second thing I would say is that as you do build up to these games of footy, there is a great hesitation from staff and support staff in particular to knock people off their game. And the concept that someone would go in and say, hey, you don't seem yourself today, as this player goes to put themselves out in front of 80,000 people, I think is a pretty questionable concept. At the risk that they were wrong, and then they throw this player off and the player has a bad game, this is quite a severe set of consequences that could exist. And so for me, I think through it through the lens of the fact that, one, as we talk about this topic, I think it's critically important that we don't talk about Elijah, but we talk about the issue as a whole and how in any moment within a game of football, if this injury of sorts was considered to be an Achilles or a knee, they would have been brought off the ground. And the question from my point of view is, rather than focusing on the club or the player, if you focus on the issue, how can this be better served and supported into the future? So we use this as a learning moment and a point of improvement rather than something that we continue to regret into the future.
Since the game, we have been working through a thorough process surrounding the circumstances, both leading into and throughout the match, and remain in close consultation with the AFL and the AFLPA.
So as you say, the AFL has strict injury and concussion protocols. If a player hurts their hamstring, they're out for the rest of the game. If they get a head knock and is concussed, they miss the following week. Do we need some kind of similar framework to check in with players around their mental health, both pre-game, post-game and also in-game?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I think it is a challenging framework to implement. I'm probably not the academic person to talk through around what that could look like. And to be fair, there is a lot of connection, and in particular with the assistant coaches, the medicos and those types of things, as you progress players to get ready, right? And I think this is one of the interesting parts is you sort of arrive at the ground, you deal with the medicos first.
We understand that, you know, Elijah's got some mental health issues and as he's been very open and honest with that. But I feel like he's got great medical people. We've got fantastic medical staff here who have a long history with Elijah as well and understanding his issues.
Then you move to the assistant coaches, then the senior coach, and then you go out with the trainers and you start the game. And I think that broadly speaking, the perspective of all of those people, I mean this as genuinely as I can, is they want the best for everyone there. And that is a really important thing to keep at the forefront of our minds. Whether there was mistakes made or issues that could have been prevented, that's another conversation. The intention of these people is incredibly pure, and that's why they're in the jobs that they're in. And so for me, I'm not sure on the practical solution in terms of putting a framework in place to actually vet players. And I'm not sure how that would practically work, whether it's feasible academically or not. But I do think that this sort of overall concept, and this was something, by the way, that came up when I actually took time off the game. My message to the public was, just like any other injury, I need to rehabilitate myself to get back out and do my job. And if we look at it through the lens of that and the safety of our players and our people and our staff and the players that obviously make the game possible, I think that's going to serve us well in how we treat these things moving forward.
Elijah himself has spoken about his own mental health battles, and he's spoken publicly about a game last season against Sydney where he came off and he felt like he couldn't breathe, he wasn't contributing. He described it himself as a mini panic attack. Have you ever experienced anything like that? What would that be like for him in game?
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that these games are not just one moment in time, right? It's not like the game itself is the episode, and I'm talking from my own personal point of view now rather than what happened last Thursday night. From my perspective, it was a cumulative effect over a number of years as I continued to have worse and worse issues, particularly around sleep, and by the way, particularly around sleep leading into games. And so the concept of turning up to a game of footy where, and I often say, you know, it'd be great to play in front of 60,000, but I used to play in front of about 25 as a Bulldogs player. Turning up in front of 25,000 people, completely underdone from a rest and recovery point of view, unable to concentrate, and then really trying to use whatever means are necessary to get myself to concentrate and focus and prepare so that I don't end up on the back page of the paper as the person who failed. It's an extraordinary amount of stress to add on to what already is an incredibly stressful environment being an AFL footballer. And so for me, I know a lot of players who have dealt with the challenges of preparation for games. And obviously this is an example where it spills down into something that's more visual rather than what I would say a lot of players are dealing with under the surface as they prepare for these high pressure environments.
Yeah, he sort of feels like he's let people down, but we've just got to keep supporting people through those situations.
In your experience, when you did come in feeling maybe like you weren't well enough rested or you weren't entirely 100% mentally or physically ready for a match, did you feel as though you had opportunities to say to someone, I don't feel right, I'm not right to play mentally?
Yeah, probably all week up until game day. And this is one of the great challenges of professional sport. And it's really the defining factor that says to me, we need to learn how to manage these things rather than hoping. It seems unreasonable to me that we're going to massively prevent every issue. It's a really competitive environment. It's incredibly stress-inducing and high pressure. And so for me, you know, like anyone, whether it's mental or physical, most of the players that you see running around on the screen every single week have some significant health issue of some kind, right? Whether they have got an ankle that's hurt or a hamstring that's sore or a back that needs surgery or a shoulder for that matter, as I played with for a long time. The challenge with the mental side of things is that these can be incredibly long-lasting issues. They don't get the same treatment because they're not as obvious in terms of how to deal with it. And the rehabilitation, by the way, doesn't have as clear a milestones, right? When a finger is broken, you can see when it's healed. And this is where I think one of the great challenges for the game is how do we think about the sustainable and long-looking approach to our players who are making the game possible? Because often is the case that we look at these things very short-term and it is the next game that's the most important.
The conversation is getting louder around the competition for some kind of mental health round to shine a bigger light on this issue. Bailey Smith added his voice to that chorus as well.
I just want to shout out the Dawson family this week and Elijah Hollins last night. I don't know if I'm out of pocket saying it, but I think it's about time AFL get a men's mental health round. It just makes you feel sick during the week and hopefully the AFL community wraps their arms around them and we can do something.
Is it something you'd like to see? Do you think this is something that could have an impact?
Look, my perspective is this. I think that there is a value to bringing attention to an issue in an incredibly specific and heightened way, and we do it with every issue. But really what I see is the greatest opportunity for the game of the AFL circles is that they can be the greatest force for improving overall health, not just mental health, in our society today. And the clear goals from the game that they've laid out in their strategy is to grow participation by a huge amount over the course of the next 6, 7, or 8 years as they approach 2030. And by and large, if they just execute on that in an effective way, they're going to make a positive impact in this space. If you layer onto that, that if a concerted effort was made to prioritize the mental health of those communities that they're engaging with anyway, in some way, shape, or form, through partners, awareness, education, support, funding, you name it, they're going to make an enormous impact. And this is why I see the opportunity for a mental health round, not to be a review of everything that's gone wrong, but actually a great way to celebrate the incredible impact that our game has as of this day, but equally to encourage that concerted effort over an extended period of time and use that, I suppose, as a review and celebration point for the progress that we've made in the last 12 months. So I certainly would be behind it.
Just finally on Elijah and his family, his dad put up a heartfelt post about his, quote, beautiful boy on Instagram today after the news that he's been admitted to hospital. His brother, Ollie, plays in that same team and is potentially in the team for this weekend's game against Fremantle. We saw what Jordan Dawson has been through with his brother in the last week or so. How would you like to see the AFL community, be it fans or footy clubs, wrap its arms around players in times like this?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember just the magnitude, as I mentioned earlier, of the suffocating nature of what's going on at the moment. I mean, this is a position I personally have been in where you don't feel like you can leave the house. You don't feel like you can have a conversation with anyone. You have a very, very small circle of trusted people who feel like you actually can rely on and feel like who they support you. And as this conversation has evolved, obviously, since Thursday night, I think it's critically important to remember the sheer magnitude of what this conversation actually means, not only for Elijah's life, but also for the people who are close to him, the broader footy club and the community as a whole. And if nothing else, if we can put ourselves in the shoes of that person being someone that we care about and realizing that the game's ability to impact mental health in a positive way is incredibly important.
Tom Boyd, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And if you or anyone you know is struggling, you can always contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. Headlines. The NRL have moved to bring in new safety guidelines for the men's and women's competitions to limit contact training. In season, men's players are to engage in no more than 100 minutes of contact training on a regular 7-day turnaround. And for NRLW athletes, that drops to 85 minutes. For both men and women on 5- and 6-day turnarounds, that drops to 40 and 50 minutes, respectively. During the NRL preseason, the limit is no more than 200 minutes per week, and for NRLW, it's 115 minutes. The changes come in a bid to reduce injuries, including concussion. Staying with NRL, and the Dragons have named Dean Young as their interim coach for at least the rest of 2026. The changes continue at St George Illawarra, with assistant coach Michael Ennis parting ways with the club just 24 hours after head coach Shane Flanagan. AFL and Zach Butters has had his $1,500 fine for abusive or offensive language toward an umpire overturned after the tribunal deemed there had been a miscarriage of justice. What was that miscarriage? Tribunal member Jason Johnson was driving his car during final submissions, and Port Adelaide successfully argued that he could not have properly considered the deliberations if he was also focused on driving. Long story short, Zach Butters is no longer out of pocket $1,500. I'm Poppy Penny, and this is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Declan Byrne.